There are lots of ways to enjoy the outdoors, from the very relaxing to the very active. This weekend we were active, but we also relaxed a little bit. Hope you did too. But if you're looking for a fun way to get outdoors, especially with youngsters, we have a great show for you today. Larry Mueller here. Just last week we talked about how kids actually lose fitness over the summers now. Hard to believe, but it's true. So I think, you know, we're all curious about new ways to get kids up and moving. One fun way is through geocaching. And like lots of things that are good for us, there are a lot of benefits to it besides the most obvious. And joining us today are two geocachers who've gotten their children involved from a very early age. Rebecca Lillo is a board member of the Wisconsin Geocaching Association. And Becca, thank you for joining us today. Appreciate it very much.
Well, thank you for asking me to be on your show.
Appreciate it. August Hopp is an active member of the Wisconsin Geocaching Association. And August, welcome to the show. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Becca.
Morning.
You may be, as you listen in, you may be a geocacher. I hope you'll join in and talk about your experiences. What do you like about it? You have a story of a favorite cache to share. And as you're listening, you may have some questions. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And, of course, we would love to hear from you. And I suppose we should just start by explaining just what is geocaching. And, Rebecca, do you want to start?
Sure. Yeah, geocaching is a high-tech treasure hunt, although I like to use the term treasure loosely because you don't usually get anything of any real value. Occasionally, though, you may find something that people have left. But basically, someone will go out and hide a container. They can vary in sizes, from something as large as a trash can to something as small as a film canister. And they go and hide them in a variety of places. There really are geocaches everywhere. Usually they're out in the woods or in a park. Sometimes they're in the middle of the city, though. And they use a handheld GPS unit, and they take down the coordinates from the satellites where it is that they're located, and they post those coordinates on geocaching.com. And they also tell you a little bit about it. Sometimes you'll get to learn some history about the area. You get to learn about what size of thing you're looking for. And then people just go out and they use their own handheld GPS units, and they go out and they find them. And there's always a log, something you can sign to prove that you were there inside. Some of the larger containers have things inside to trade. So the rule is if you take something, you should leave something as well. And so you can go out and find one, you can go out and find hundreds. Everybody plays the game a little differently, and it's a really good time.
Sounds like a lot of fun. August, how did you get involved with it?
Well, my wife was looking for a way for us to get the kids outside and found a free app on her iPhone, actually. So we figured we'd give it a shot. Park less than a mile from our house, and went out and found our first one.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yep, it's free, you know, just get outside, enjoy the day with the kids.
So there was an app that actually allowed you to do this?
Yep, right on your smartphone. You can download it. I believe they're free unless you want to upgrade for some extra capabilities, and there's a slight charge.
So a lot of people these days obviously have smartphones, so you're not talking about a whole lot of money here then, necessarily.
Most people are probably already set to go.
Very, very cool. Rebecca, how did you get started in it?
Well, I'd heard about it off and on from some of my outdoorsy friends. And but one day my cousin and a good friend down in Arizona posted some pictures on Facebook of a geocaching adventure where they'd gone out into the desert and found an ammo can out there. And I just thought that looked like fun. And then my mom and dad also saw the same pictures, and they started geocaching, and they kind of urged us to get started. So we did. We got our information, and I used my phone as well to go out and find a cache in a park not too far from our house, and we were instantly hooked.
And so the kids like it too?
Oh yeah, the kids love it. My daughter likes to brag that nobody in her school has stories like she does, because we go on all kinds of crazy adventures. But it's a great way to get the kids outside and get them active. It's kind of an additional incentive to go out, we've used geocaching to go hiking or biking, canoeing, snowshoeing, rock climbing, all kinds of different activities you can do.
Maybe you could talk a little bit more. Yeah, maybe you could talk a little bit more why you think it's such a good activity for involving kids.
Right. Yeah, definitely. It's tempting to just let the kids just, you know, lie on the couch watching TV all day in the summer, but it's just not good for them. And we've had a lot of great family bonding experiences, as well as the exercise, which is so important for kids to go out and use their bodies and get active.
Maybe, August, you could talk about how you've gotten your children active in geocaching.
Sure. We like to start our adventures out with a park so they can run around a little, play on the equipment, and then, you know, they get to go find treasure, which is great if you're 5 years old and they don't care if it's a race car or pencil, whatever they might find, and kind of teach them about value and swapping out stuff. And then we can get out hiking. I mean, the boys, we do enough of it, they can go almost 2 miles before they start complaining they're tired, and then end the day at another park so they can burn off any excess energy.
That sounds like a pretty good way to do it. Rebecca, do you do a similar kind of thing?
Yeah, definitely. We started out by visiting parks with playgrounds, and that's how we started geocaching. Was we'd go and the kids would run around, and then we'd go and into the woods and find the geocache, and then maybe they'd play on a little bit more. And now that my kids are getting a little bit older, they're a little older than August, and so we still will go, you know, maybe we'll go find one that's near a lake or something, and then they'll go swimming for a while. We'll do geocaching and we'll combine it with something else that the kids enjoy as well.
What skills do you think kids learn from this? Rebecca, well, start with you.
Sure. I talked to my kids' teachers and also 4-H and things like that about how they learn about the longitude and latitude line. So it's kind of a social studies lesson, because they're getting the coordinates and that's where they come from. You can look at a globe and these lines don't mean much to them. But my daughter, one time when they were talking about these lines on the globe in her social studies class, she goes, "Oh yeah, we live, you know, at N43 and knew exactly what her longitude and latitude lines were for her house, and no one else knew that." So that they learn. They also learn things like, you know, when we're out on the trail, we'll talk about animal homes as we're passing them, and so they can identify, you know, a snake will live in this kind of a hole, and a bird will make this kind of a nest, depending on the type of bird. We learn all about plants. They've learned to become respectful of the environment, which means a lot to me, because I love being outdoors, and I don't want the kids trashing, or, you know, destroying trees and flowers and things like that. I think that there are many different valuable lessons that they learn from geocaching.
Oh, that's great. Anything to add to that, August?
I would say just perseverance. I mean, sometimes when you're looking for some of the harder caches, you know, it's not going to be the first place you look. So they've learned to kind of keep inspecting their environment, looking for things that might be out of place, kind of thinking outside the box a little bit.
So tell me, we're going to get to Ron and Andrew, both online waiting to talk to us. By the way, you can join in too at 800-642-1234. Is there a way you could describe how this works? So you've got an app, August, and what happens?
Well, you'll enter in your home coordinates. So then you can do a search around your area, finding caches around Madison. You know, there's thousands of caches within a 20-30 mile radius of here. Find one that looks like it might be fun, based on the name or based on the size, difficulty, whatever you're looking for, bring it up and the app will navigate you right to it. You can get either a street view or just a like a distance bearing kind of idea of it, and slowly narrowing your search and do what we call the drunken bee dance, because it's not perfect, so you might wander in circles a little bit.
Oh, it sounds like fun. Ron in Fond du Lac, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I just wanted to share a real quick short story with you. How I happened upon geocaching. I was riding my motorcycle down the road by the park, and I saw some kids. They looked to be like 14, 15, two boys, and they were standing by a billboard and putting, I could see, you know, the timing was just perfect. I could see they were putting a film canister up behind the beam on the billboard, and I thought, oh boy, these guys are hiding something from their parents. So I went and did my errands, and on the way back, I parked and got out. And I looked up to where they were putting this little canister, and I grabbed it down, and I looked inside, and there was just a piece of paper in there all folded up. I took the paper out, and I looked at it, and it was a geocaching canister. And they said, please, you know, congratulations, finding our hidden geocache. Please, you know, put your initials on here and the date and the time and, you know, put it back. And so I'm like, geocaching? And I had never heard of it. I'm an older gentleman, and I thought, geocaching, geez. So I went home and I Googled geocaching, and holy cow, it opened up a whole new world for us. We already had a handheld GPS because we're big sailors, and we've got three or four different GPS units on the boat. So we got that, and we just started looking up some coordinates and close to home. And before you knew it, I mean, we were finding stuff close to home. And then when we go on a road trip, we'd write down some coordinates and look around for stuff, and it's taken us to some very interesting locations. We found some restaurants way far back in the woods that we never would have found before. It's taken us on hiking trails right here in Wisconsin that we never knew were there. So it's been very inspiring, and the people that you meet that are doing the same thing as you when you're in the woods are just, everybody is just so nice and sharing stories, and that's how we got involved in it. Otherwise, I don't think I ever would have known about geocaching.
That's a great story, Rebecca.
Yeah, that's great.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Ron, for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, that's an unusual. You probably haven't heard that way ever. Heard that way of how somebody got involved with geocaching, Rebecca?
No, it's kind of fun to hear everybody's story about how they got started, because everyone is different.
Rebecca Lillo is a board member for the Wisconsin Geocaching Association. August Hopp, active member of the Wisconsin Geocaching Association. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I hope you'll stay tuned, because at 11:45 today, we'll talk with an archaeologist about some recent discoveries at the Aztalan site in southern Wisconsin. Should be really interesting. Right now, talking about another interesting topic, geocaching, with our two guests, Rebecca Lillo and August Hopp from the Wisconsin Geocaching Association. Questions, comments, or experiences to share, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Andrew in Portage, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to share a story about me and my brother. About 3 years ago, I took a road trip up way up in Canada in the Lake Temagami area, and we placed a cache way far away from any roads. And it's been about 3 years now, and still nobody's found it. And I still have very fond memories of that trip. And I was just kind of, if anybody out there is listening and wants a big challenge, and they can go look for this one, because the first log was about less than a month ago for this cache, and this guy tried, and he biked about 5 miles or 6 miles, because we went over water, but he went up by paths and bike paths and stuff, and he couldn't get it. So it's been 3 years now, and I was just hoping that somebody would find it eventually.
Ah, So
long time for it not to be found.
Yeah.
So is it that remote?
Yep. It's we placed it by taking some open water kayaks, kind of going. I think we were headed south on the Quebec-Ontario border, and we paddled about 13 miles, and then we docked and then climbed up a chasm, and we placed it right on the border there, and still nobody found it.
Well, that's cool. And, Rebecca, that's unusual for one to go that long, you think?
Yeah, the Wisconsin Geocaching Association has a game called the Lonely Cache Game, and both August and I are players in the game. Where we they choose the caches that have not been found in the 500 caches that have been found in the most amount of time, I guess. And so they're on the list, and then you get points for doing it. It's really just you don't get anything, really. It's just for fun. But just to make sure that caches do get found and visited and make sure that they're that all is well. They don't need anything replaced if anything got damaged. So I would assume that one would be on there. I haven't noticed it myself, but maybe I'll have to look that up. That sounds like a grand adventure.
Becca, we can plan a vacation.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I have a boat.
All right. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks again.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And let's turn to Sue in Wausau next. Hi, Sue.
Hi, I just wanted to let you know we got introduced into geocaching through the Boy Scouts. My son was part of a troop who started to do geocaching, and actually to this day now he is teaching the merit badge up at the Boy Scout camp in Rhinelander this summer. And then he also he did his Eagle Project as part of the geocaching. He put two caches within his Eagle Project so people can use that as well. And then lastly, he is part of the Science Olympiad program through his high school, and he took second in the state competition this year for the geocaching.
Well, that is very cool. Science Olympiad is great, is a great organization, and it's wonderful to know that geocaching is part of it. I didn't realize that.
It's just actually a fairly new event, and it's going to grow. I do see that happening, so it's really cool.
Oh, very good. Thank you very much for calling. So Rebecca, a lot of people get involved, a lot of youngsters get involved that way through scouting?
Yeah, they do. Quite a few scouting groups, both the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts. I've heard that they do a lot of geocaching. There's also, our family does 4-H. We don't do scouting, but our club has gone geocaching as well. I hear about this all the time with youth groups from churches or from, you know, I work at the YMCA also, and we have done geocaching camps. A lot of kids really, really enjoy it, especially the aspect of going out and finding something and who can be the first one to find it. And then they love going through the toys and finding things to trade. Sometimes they're not things of much value, but it doesn't matter. Just the kids love looking through it and seeing what new things that can come out of this container that we've found.
Well, the app that you can get for your smartphone, August, what's the app that you have, for example?
Mainly I use my handheld GPS, but it's just geocaching, I think, is if you search for that, you'll find
there. If you just put geocaching in.
Out by the Groundspeak, the company that kind of oversees geocaching.
And does it work pretty well?
Yeah, the phones now have good enough technology. They get you really close and not too bad.
All right. Well, that's good to know. Michael and Stoddard, it's your turn. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. I've got a different spin on geocaching. It's called reverse geocaching, and basically what you do is you take a microcontroller, an Arduino, and you take a GPS and an LCD display, a servo, and a button, and you put it all in a box, and you put a little trinket in there, and then you give it to a friend, and you press the button on the box, and it gives you the distance, and they have to go to the spot, and then the box opens, and they get the trinket inside.
Ah, that's something there. Is that something that you're aware of, Rebecca?
I haven't heard of that particular one, but there are some very, very interesting geocache containers out there. It really amazes me how people can use their creativity and make the game interesting. I very much enjoy doing things, you know, differently. And there's just all different ways to play the game. And that sounds like a fun one.
It does. Could you talk a little about the Wisconsin Geocaching Association?
Sure. This is my first year on the board of directors. Association has been around, I believe, 11 years. Every year we have a couple of events. There's a camp out in the late spring, and then there's a picnic in the fall, and then in the winter they get together for a chili cook-off. And they provide a way for geocachers to get together and socialize and talk to each other. We provide information about getting permission. You always need to make sure that when you're going out and hiding a geocache that you get permission from the landowner, whoever that is. And so we have information on the website about who you need to get permission from, because sometimes that can be intimidating to people. They don't know who to contact, if it's a state park, a county park, things like that. And there's also all kinds of forums for discussion on all things related to geocaching, and then there's also forums available for people to talk about whatever they want. It's just a great place for people to go, especially people who are newer to the game, who don't really know the rules, and maybe they've got questions. So they can go into the forums, and they can post those questions, and people will answer them. A big part of it is the social aspect, meeting other people who also enjoy being in the great outdoors and bouncing ideas off each other about what they enjoy about geocaching. And it's a great organization. Everybody's been really friendly and helpful, and I enjoy it a lot, being a part of that.
And we have a link to the association on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. If you want to just go there, you can click right on it and get a link. While you're there, you should take a look at a recent poster. August posted a view from a geocache. The cache is called the Silver Island Treasure. That's a pretty cool picture.
It was a very cool geocache. Our family just got back from vacation, and I went up on top of that cliff to find the geocache. It was about a 70-foot climb up along. They had some dead trees wedged into a crack. Uh-huh. To get you about halfway up, and then a rope, or just a rope that you kind of hand over hand climbed up the rest. And standing up on top, looking over Lake Superior with the gulls yelling at me because I was up by their nests.
Well, I tell you what, it's a beautiful spot, but I don't think I'm going to be following you up that side of that cliff, to be perfectly honest. James wondered if you can your four-legged family members go geocaching?
Yeah, we've got a dog, and we bring her to quite a few. Of course, there are some places that dogs can't go. There's something on every geocache page that's really handy. It's called the attributes section, and it will tell you what to expect from the area. So one of the attributes is whether or not it's dog-friendly. So it'll have an icon with a dog or a no dog if they're not allowed in that area. Then it'll also tell you whether it's a long hike, a short hike, whether there's ticks or poisonous plants, or whether it's one that you should do at night, whether it's a park and grab, which is usually something where you park and you can just easily do it and easily find it and then move on. Or I can't remember. I believe that there are about 30 attributes to choose from. So it's very handy because you can, like I said, everybody plays the game or the hobby a little bit differently, so it can make it very easy to find what you're interested in, because not everybody wants to climb up a cliff like August did. There are people who will go geocaching in a wheelchair even, and so you look for an attribute or the terrain rating that will tell you what to expect. So reading the geocache page tells you quite a lot of information. It's very handy.
Sounds great. Gary in Richland Center, we'll turn to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Oh, hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Hi, August, how are you doing?
Good, how are you, Gary?
Oh, not too bad. Say, my comment was kind of like on the types of geocaches. You know, I'm fairly well-seasoned, and maybe, August, you could elaborate a little bit, you know, like the mystery cache where somebody that's new to the game, they look at it and say, well, I went here, now what? You know, and then there's multi-caches and webcams. There's a few left. You know, maybe you could elaborate on that so people kind of understand what's going on with that type.
Sure. One of the things I love about geocaching is that there is something for everyone. There's starting off, there are even a couple types of caches that don't have containers. They're called virtual caches or earth caches, which a lot of times the virtuals will teach history, just unique spots around the state. And it's there's usually some sort of question you need to answer to prove that you were there. And mm-hmm. You don't have to post a picture, but I think most people do because you find some pretty interesting things. Earth caches are a great way to teach your kids some, you know, earth science type things, geology, geography. Then you have the basic cache is just a traditional cache. It's basically a box in the woods.
Yep.
It's a nice, easy, straightforward. Multi-caches would involve multiple stages where you would find the first spot and it would contain coordinates for your next stage. I've done ones that were two stages and I did one that was 11 stages.
Whoa.
So it can take all afternoon to do one cache, but it's usually worth it. Mystery caches are probably my favorite. It's a way to keep my brain working. So go out and solve some puzzles either in the field based on plaques and signs or doing Sudokus at home, doing crosswords, letter drops, all kinds of whatever people's creativity can bring to that category. They do have another activity similar to geocaching is letterboxing, and there are letterbox hybrid caches which combine elements of the two.
So lots of different ways to do it.
Something for everybody.
Gary, thank you. Appreciate it. Spencer and Racine, hi to you. Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much for the show. I love it. The point that I wanted to make was that, or the thing that I wanted to raise was the term muggles. It was a term that I learned while doing geocaching, I think up in Appleton first, and it said, watch out for muggles. And muggles are people that don't geocache to keep the cache safe from other people.
Muggles. So
yes, that was it's a term that was taken from Harry Potter.
Exactly.
Non-magic people, and so with geocaching, it's non-geocaching people. Just like the first caller who talked about how they noticed some people or some kids going and finding this thing, and thought they were probably up to no good, and that's how they discovered geocaching. So similar, muggles. Somebody will notice what you're doing, and then they might take the container. And especially for kids, if they see something with toys inside, they're just going to take it. And then it's disappointing for people who go out and the geocache is gone.
Oh.
Exactly.
Well, you hope that doesn't happen too often.
Oh, no, yeah.
Well, thanks for calling. So muggles, that's muggles and geocaching. Mary in Green Bay?
Yeah.
Are you a muggles type or are you just a geocacher?
No, I'm a geocacher, have been for quite a few years. Not real steady, but on and off as it fits the lifestyle. And we're travelers, so we have geocached at quite a few different countries around the world.
Wow.
Now, there are travel bugs. I haven't heard them mentioned, but what they are is you buy a number, and then it gets its own page, and you attach it to whatever little character trinket you want, and you put it in a geocache, and then people take it and move it from cache to cache, and you can follow it. And a few years ago, I found a little cow that had the number, and I was able, through the geocache site, to call the owner, or to notify the owner that we had it and that we were going to India, and that was the cow's goal. And I needed to keep it for a little while, but would that be okay? And he wrote back and said, absolutely, take it to India. So So we did. We took it and put it in a cache in Agra, right near the Taj Mahal. But I did not have a computer to log in that had gotten to India until about 5 days later when I got home. So when I got home, I went on the computer to log in that this cow was placed in India to find out that someone had already logged in and brought it back to Milwaukee.
Oh, my goodness. So it went to India, and 5 days later, it's back in Milwaukee.
It beat me home.
Oh, that's a great story, Mary. Thanks a lot for sharing that. So you've had some great experiences.
Oh, we've geocached in Ireland and Tahiti and Bora Bora. You can find them everywhere.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you again for calling. Appreciate it. Megan and Banger, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to call and say how geocaching has been so great for my family. My mom's been geocaching for probably 10 years or so. And we used to tease her about it, just hiking so far for trinkets, we would say. But then she came with me when I went to Thailand, and we went to this really neat geocache that we had to sea kayak over to a small island. And she made a believer out of me then. A couple years ago, my dad unexpectedly passed away, and her sisters went on a trip with her, and she introduced geocaching to them. And since that time, they get together every once in a while and go geocaching, and it's so great to see how they've connected.
Very, very cool. Comment from you, Rebecca?
I agree that it's a fun way to kind of to do something together. I've done it with my parents as well. My parents are the type that mostly just geocache when they're on vacation. They'll use it to kind of sightsee. And we do that as well. They're all over the place. And, it's a great way to just kind of have an excuse to do something.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Megan. There's another side to this that we need to also be aware of, an email from Nikki. She says, I've taken groups of children geocaching, and it is fun, but I've also worked for a county-managed nature preserve. And there are many hundreds of caches on this land without permission that even suggest bushwhacking in the description. So I have very mixed feelings about it. I'm happy people spend time in nature, but there are still negative effects. And you want to comment on that, August?
Sure. I mean, unfortunately, it is something where people can put them wherever. That's one of the reasons we do have the links on who to contact on various types of land on the WGA webpage. Also, when you put out a cache, you have to submit it to some volunteer reviewers, and they try to look over these things, make sure that you're notifying them that you do have the permission of the land manager. In a case like this, if that's something that there's an area where it's a problem, if they contact the board of directors with the WGA, we could try to, you know, look into it and work with the land manager, find out if these should be there or not. If it's an issue where we get notified that something shouldn't be there, we'll definitely work to get those out. We also have a cache rescue program so that containers don't get left out in the woods as trash if they're not being maintained.
Got it. Okay. And Gustav in La Crosse, I think, up next. Hi, Gustav. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
My question is there a fair amount of people that geocache that use, maps and compass and more traditional orienteering techniques?
Oh.
I don't know if I'd say there's a lot of people that do that, but I do know some cachers and have some friends that will work just off, like, look at the satellite map and then use distance and bearing to try to find the cache. It's obviously going to take you a little bit longer and be a little tougher search than using the GPS that zeroes you right into the area.
Hmm. Interesting. Thank you, Gustav. John in Wauwatosa, hello.
Hi. My question is regarding caching at night. Rebecca mentioned before that something about caching at night, and I was wondering if you could explain that a bit more.
Yeah, Becca, you want to talk about that?
Sure, I've had some great adventures caching at night. As I said, that there is an attribute that lets you know if this is a night geocache. And what that usually is you take a flashlight or several flashlights, and you'll go out there, and instead of coordinates that lead you, well, the coordinates will get you started, but then you go around, you flash your flashlight around, and you look for some sort of a reflector tag. And then you just kind of have to keep walking and following these reflector tags, and it'll eventually lead you to the geocache. They're all geocaches are different, so they might be hidden in different ways. But typically you follow a trail of reflector tags, and sometimes it kind of adds the element of the creepiness. but it's also it's very fun. We usually tend to not do those by ourselves. We'll do the whole family and maybe meet some friends just for the safety issue. But it can be really fun going out at night. You're not going to be really hot during the day if you're going in the summer, and it just kind of adds a different element into the whole experience. And I enjoy it.
It does sound like a lot of fun. There are events. You mentioned events earlier. I know there's one coming up. Isn't there an event at West Bend or something coming up August?
Yeah, every year the West Bend puts on what's called the West Bend Cache Bash, which is considered a mega event since so many people from around the country, even around the world, will come visit our little corner of the world. We also put on what are called CETO events, which is Cash In, Trash Out, where we go out and clean up areas that maybe, you know, work with the city or parks department to pick up trash and do trail maintenance, that type of stuff.
So lots of fun. And again, the Wisconsin Geocaching Association website has all of the events and a lot more information. Becca, August, thank you so much for talking with us today. It sounds like a lot of fun. Actually, I'm going to give it a try. We have a 9-year-old, soon to be 10-year-old at home, and we're going to give it a try. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.
Becca Lillo is a board member of the Wisconsin Geocaching Association. August Hopp is an active member of the Wisconsin Geocaching Association. Sounds like a lot of fun, and I'm going to give it a try. There, you know, many fascinating aspects of it, as far as I'm concerned. Sometimes the geocaches are in plain sight, but there are other things that might take a little digging to find and a lot of knowledge to be able to interpret them. This is something a whole lot different. One of those sites is at Aztalan State Park. It's located in southeast Wisconsin between Madison and Milwaukee. Cecil Schrader is one of the several architects currently working at the site. She's a professor of anthropology at the UW-Madison. She'll be coming up with us next to talk about the recent discoveries at Aztalan. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.